Chairman Lockhart. Chairman Lockhart, privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the privilege of the floor for the good representative from Cheyenne and myself, and you can guess what we're about. We're into the final 2 weeks before we're out of here, and we need to do some steps to complete our effort to be full participants in the Susan B. Komen Race for the Cure program. As you know, the House has been a leader in that. We've gotten recognition with trophies and that sort of thing. We don't want to lose that leadership position. I think Lori reminded you last Wednesday, I hope in a way that you'll recall, that we haven't done as well as we should, and we'd like to have you start doing that. We're going to give you the easy way of doing this. You can do it with cash, checks, money orders, or even promissory notes, and I'll cover your amount with a check, and then I'll get after you personally, and I'll let Lori add to anything that she wants to say.
Well, I'll just add, I've got checks from 18 of you, so there's a lot more. I know that you probably have this in your community too, but it's really cool to head out in August when we're here in Cheyenne and be the legislators leading the way team and to collect the most amount of money. So, Childers, I'm talking to you. I have your check. Thank you.
In conclusion, there's a lot of efforts in cancer and breast cancer, but there is really only one Komen Race for the Cure, and that's the one that is in August here in Cheyenne, and that's the one we're doing our best to do a job for those who've had this kind of a problem, and we can help prevent it in the future.
Representative Philp.
Mr. Chairman, privilege of the floor, please.
Granted.
I talked to Representative Jorgensen a few minutes ago. He's feeling quite a bit better, and I was over to see him this morning, and he looks a lot better. He's still waiting for some tests, and but he's getting quite anxious to get out, so that's a good sign. And he also said thank you very much for the flowers, and so that's where he's at.
I'd like to take a moment of personal privilege here since I'm sitting up here. For all the members in the body, today is Mardi Gras, so bon Mardi Gras, laissez le bon temps pour les. And with that, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Privilege at the floor.
Granted.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's not often we get a friend from all the way from Ohio, but from Chagrin Falls, Ohio, I have a friend, Pike Hasnick. Please welcome him to the People's House of Wyoming.
Welcome to the People's House. With that, the next bill for our consideration is Senate File 60. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 60, introduced by the Transportation Committee, an act relating to the National Guard Youth Challenge Program. The bill was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Carson, Cohey, Gilmore, Hallinan, Madden, McKim, Peterson, Swanitzer. Signed, Representative Cohey, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Cohey.
Merci, Monsieur Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 60 do pass. The bill deals with the ongoing program that the state enacted about 3 or 4 years ago, the National Guard Youth Challenge Program. For a full and complete explanation, I defer to the House member from Laramie County.
Representative Millen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Chairman. Yes, I did ask the good chairman of transportation if I could present this bill, and I thank those of you on the committee for allowing me to do this. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the background of the National Guard Youth Challenge Program. It began in 1993 with 10 states, and now there's 33 programs in 27 states. It's a nationally recognized as one of the most successful at-risk programs in the United States. It's a 5.5-month in-resident course followed up by 12-month mentorship. And the legislature in 2005 established the program here in Wyoming, and we have our camp where our challenge program is just north of here. It was created to provide resources and to create opportunities and alternatives for youth ages 16 to 18 who are at risk or have dropped out of the public school system. This program helps them attain a high school diploma or a high school equivalency certification and to develop life skills. Original legislation provided funding until June 30th of 2006 and established a 45 full-time position team and reporting requirements. The legislature appropriated $1,120,000 from the School Foundation program account to the Wyoming Military Department for purposes of matching available federal funds for initiating and implementing the program. State funds were authorized to only be expended upon receipt of federal matching funds. Accordingly, the program was initially funded with 60% federal funds and 40% state funds. The national model is 100 students per semester with a budget of $2.8 million per year. Since 2005, Wyoming's program has graduated 156 students. Since Wyoming's program has been serving fewer students than the national model, the program has been receiving and spending less than the other programs. So the 45 staff that were authorized is now down to 27. In June of 2006, the Military Department requested an Attorney General's opinion about whether it would be possible for the program to expend greater than the 40% state match in order to ensure the fiscal viability of the program. And it was ruled that it was not possible given the original legislative language. That original legislative language was designed in that manner because at the time Wyoming passed this legislation, the federal match was questionable. In 2007, the federal administrator recommended a drastic reduction in federal funds, recommended giving Wyoming only about 20% of what the other states receive. That could have resulted in Wyoming having to close its program, but after a great effort in our nation's capital, the federal match was raised and Wyoming's program was able to continue operations. In the current fiscal year, the federal contribution is $1,080,000 per class. The state fiscal year contribution is $720,000. The military department believes that the worst case scenario, the federal managers will reduce Wyoming's match to $840,000 a year. With this federal match, and the state match required to continue the current program would be $960,000 per year. This would result in a 46% federal match, 54% state match. And, before the language in the bill was the 60-40. So this would still only be 85% of the full state appropriation, and is a practice that many other states have had to implement since the cost per child is $14,000 for this program. And it has not increased since its inception in 1993. Now, this might seem like a lot of money per student, but you have to remember these are at-risk students. These are kids that if they weren't in this program, they would probably be incarcerated, or they'd be juveniles in our areas that are not productive members of our society. And that $14,000 seems like a lot. This program is well worth it. So the purpose for this legislation, if you look on in page 3 of the bill, is to authorize the Wyoming Military Department to expend up to the full amount of its state appropriation for the Wyoming Youth Challenge Program. These expenditures may be made to match federal funding as available or without the federal matching funds. Now, on page 4, the department will also provide an annual report to the three committees that are listed regarding numbers, successes, budget expenditures, and the status of graduates, and this will be sunsetting in June of 2012. In summary, this program is recognized as one of the best programs in the nation for at-risk students. Wyoming's program has graduated 150 students, with the high majority of them receiving their GED. This program is too important to leave to the whim of the federal program manager in our nation's capital. And remember, there is no cost here. It simply allows the department to expend funds which are already appropriated to the Wyoming Military Department from the School Foundation program account. Now, I've been to three of these graduations, and I know that we all get invited to these, and if you haven't gone, it's a great experience. The last one I went to was December 7th of last year, and there were 37 graduates from 23 different cities. And I would just like to share with you some stories. When you go to graduation, you get to meet the students, and they also give you a yearbook that talks about some of the successes that they have. And I just wanted to share with you from a gentleman, a young man that's from the center of the state. He said, "I came to the Youth Challenge because I decided I need to change my life around when I got kicked out of Job Corps and ended up in trouble with the law. Now I see myself going back and doing great things. I see myself going to college and obtaining a degree in forest firefighting and prevention." Then there was a couple of gals in this class, and these are just amazing stories when you see the successes that these children have had. From the northwest part of the state, a young woman said, "My life was on a suicidal drug and alcohol path. I hated everyone and everything, including my family. I was a total wreck. I finally found a way out of it all here at the Youth Challenge program that changed my life. It changed my attitude towards life. I am here to get away from the toxicity of drugs and alcohol. I am here to change me and my relationship with my parents. I want to start a new life after graduation. I want a clean path to walk for the rest of my life, and I plan to attend college majoring in art." Another young woman is from the reservation, and she said, "I had a hard life full of alcohol and weed. I have seen my dad behind bars. I have been in and seen many fights. I have watched my life go downhill. I am here at the Youth Challenge program to change my life. I'm also here to make my family happy for once in my life. I am drug-free and staying out of trouble. I am also here to focus on my future. I, too, plan to go to college." And the last one I wanted to share with you is a young man from the southwest corner of the state. "I have been to many places, but most of them because of my behavior. One such place is jail. None of them helped me like this place. The Wyoming Youth Challenge Program has helped those who wanted to change and change for a better. No matter who you are or where you've been, do the best thing for you and come to the Challenge Program." And so, you know, I just wanted to say, you know, these children, it's really been a life-changing experience for them, and I really hope that you would pass this legislation through so we can let this program continue, and I will stand for any questions that you have.
Representative Peters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two questions I'd like to just for clarification. We heard this bill presented in our committee and certainly appreciate the presentation that was just recently rendered here on the floor. But two questions I have is how are these individuals identified and who refers them to the program? Is it the courts? Is it school? Or exactly how did that come about? And the second one is, what is the dropout rate of a class of 50 we pick up? What percent of them have been completing the program, this 5-month program?
Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The questions that were just answered, I'm going to leave them to the bringer of the bill, but they're to the heart of the bill, and it's really a critical component. What I want to visit with you about with regard to the bill before you, which seems fairly harmless, is that there are a couple of things that it does. The first thing that it does is right now our National Guard Youth Challenge Program is not in our statutes. And so every time we have a biennium budget, it has to come and present what it's currently doing, how it's working, and then be included. It's an exception. And what the bill before you does is it makes it permanent. It puts it in statute for the very first time. And I think that there will be a day in the future when I would like to hope that that will be possible. But because of problems in the program, I don't think that day is today. The second thing that the bill does is it talks about the proportion of money that they're allowed to spend on the program. And from the beginning, this too goes to the heart of the program. This past year, there were 76 students who were applied to the program. 73 were accepted. I'm looking at the wrong numbers. Anyway, there were about 76 students that were inducted. Of those 76 students, 44 graduated. And this is fairly typical. We're having not quite half of the kids that are entering the program actually graduating, which I served on the Transportation Committee for 2 years. And because of my passion for dropouts and for the lost lives in our state and the misdirected and how long it takes these individuals to get back on their path, I've been very interested in this program. And in the 2 years that I served on transportation, I repeatedly asked for data. And if you've served on education, very clearly you say, how much do you spend per pupil? And all you do is you take all of the pupils and you divide that into the amount of money spent. Today, we've already been told that the cost for this program is a little bit over $14,000 per pupil. That bears no resemblance to the total amount that is spent on the program and the amount of pupils that are graduating. In fact, and these were some of the numbers I was given when I served on transportation, we've been spending up to $50,000 per pupil. And the reason why is because, number one, very few kids across Wyoming have gone to the program, and number two, even those that don't go have not remained with it. What I'd like to share with you is something I never received when I was on the Transportation Committee, and that is the full report of an internal investigation into the Youth Challenge program and what they found internally about some of the reasons for the problems in the program. This report was written as of October 14th, and it was given to me in a stack of papers because I serve on appropriations. It was never given to me all the times I ask questions on transportation. And in this report, they have staff turnover in this program is 97%. That's just one of the findings. Operation staff were hired in the last 6 months. They only have 11 internet-connected workstations for the students. Previously, the federal government, whose program it was, wanted them to have 200 graduates a year. They have never been able to do that, and so they've lowered their own standards, and they hope to have 100 graduates. As I repeated, last year they only had 44. The counselor is not providing guidance counseling for cadets in support of the standard operating procedures for counseling. These are the findings just 3 months ago, and they're trying to address these problems in the program. Staff do not understand program requirements and lack appropriate training. There is no plan to assess staff training needs. And so, rightly, as any internal audit does,
the National Guard is saying, okay, we're going to try and fix these issues. Rather than go on and read more of the findings, which I would be glad to share with any of you, my sense is this is a program that we as a state want. We want it to be successful. It's not there yet. There are still significant problems. And until we have more information this next year, after they're trying to implement the improvements, I think it is a mistake to codify it, put it into our statutes. I think we still have to see, can they be successful? Part of the reason for my feeling that way is, for the past 2 years, I've asked these similar questions. What are you doing? And I was told every single year, we have a new way of recruiting in the state. This draft, which was written 3 months ago, said they did not have a recruiting plan. I would like to believe, and I know that they have a recruiting plan that they're working on, but I was told for 2 years in a row that they had one and they didn't. What I want is to see it be successful, so let's watch it, and the next time we meet, once they are successful and they've made those remediations that are recommended in their own internal audit, at that point, we can look at the bill before us. But at this point, I think it's really premature, and for that reason, I will not be supporting it.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise in support of this bill, and I realize that we had one significant fallback that happened that had responsible for some of that major turnover. But one of the reasons why I'm such a big advocate of this program is we have something that's been vetted nationwide. And when I was originally on the Transportation Committee and the stuff that came before me and why I chose to support this bill and be the floor manager of this bill was the outcome orient of it. When you have the people who end this program, 56% go on to employment, 12.3% go on to military enrollment, 27% go on to continue their education. That's a pretty significant number, and this is a number that was given to me because we talked a little bit about some different numbers that we need to have. About the state says, you know, maybe it's 14,000, maybe it's 50,000. The facts are is the numbers that were given to us in transportation is a high school dropout has potential of costing the state $1 million over their lifetime. $1 million over their lifetime, and all of the things that we're going to have to be paying for different unemployment pieces, different Medicaid issues, different possible incarceration. There's a lot of different pieces in this, and so we're paying up front a small amount to cover a large amount in the end. And there are issues why kids don't necessarily complete the program. There's a myriad of them. Some include failure to return from a pass, a weekend pass. Some of them include unacceptable behavior. But a few others are left at their parents' request. Some of them are medical reasons. And one of them is returning to high school. So that's a fairly legitimate reason to end up getting back and have a success in this program. I think that what this program recognizes, and the reason why I think we should have it as a consistent state-supported issue, is it represents second chances. And a lot of you were here, and some of you were lucky enough, like me, to serve with former chairman of the Transportation Committee from Douglas, a gentleman who has 1,183 tailhook landings, 1,189 tailhook landings, but 1,190 takeoffs. And he'll share that story with you, I'm sure, if you ask him. But the point of it is he was actually given a very similar second chance in that he was actually different than this program. He's mandated you may go join the military or you may go to jail. And he did that, and he ended his career as a captain of a helicopter carrier. And it's with those types of second chances that I think a lot of us serve. A lot of people in this room have been got a gift of a second chance. I know I've received quite a few in my life, more than I probably needed. But these are the types of things that I think help kids out. And I support this. And I think what we risk is a lot of these states have ongoing funding, and we don't. And one of the reasons why we picked this up. If you remember, we had this actually go effective immediately based on the fact that we were racing a state of Cornhuskers as to who would get the final program, because this isn't an infinite number of programs. There was one more left when we went in for it. And I feel that if we don't give this long-term support for a state, we have the potential to lose it to another one.
Representative Lovenow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. couple things that are important about this bill. Number one, there aren't any new dollars. We're just authorizing the expenditure of already appropriated dollars. So we've already made the appropriation. This bill authorizes the expenditure. Without the authorization, we throw the program out with the bathwater. So 199702, I think, is important. Number two is the good representative from Washakie County is correct. This does put this program in statute. It does it temporarily. You turn to page 4 of the bill, lines 15 and 16, there's a repealer or a sunset date for this program on June 30th, 2012. So we're not locking this thing into statutes permanently. And as with everything, nothing's safe when we're in session. And so if we don't like it next year, we can come back and repeal it sooner if we want to. There are some internal problems, but look at the kind of folks that we're dealing with. We're dealing with highly at-risk folks, the hardest people to work with in the world. And we're having monumental success with those children. Without this program, where would they be? Answer that question. When 56% of them are going to work and 13% of them are going on to school or going on to the military and 27% are going on to work, it seems to me that for those kids who graduate this program, we're providing a pretty good service, and we're doing it with 60% federal money, and that's good, too. The money we've already spent on this program, we've already appropriated. So I'd urge you to support the bill, and if there are some amendments and some reporting requirements that you want to make, we can sure do some second reading amendments to do that, but I think it would be a shame to kill this bill on general file, and I'd urge you to pass the bill.
Representative Goggles.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was here when we first entertained the bill to fund this National Guard Youth Challenge. And at the time, we talked about young men and young women. And the idea was to provide them the opportunity to get a high school diploma or a GED. And I'd like to ask the sponsors a question about if they would consider, or have they considered, because of the reporting deficiencies, transferring the responsibilities of this program from the military department to the Department of Education. I'd like you to answer that. And I see some heads kind of going like this, but I'd like to have an answer to that.
Representative Escobel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sometimes I go by what I see, and I know last week when I saw these young men and women here in the Capitol, they filled that gallery up there. In visiting with them, you can see that the program instilled a new hope in their eyes. I just want to go back to some of the stats that I had mentioned earlier in another bill, that when you look at juvenile incarceration, that we had 357 in the state of Wyoming. That was in 2007. And we were 737% higher than the best state. I don't think that needs to be repeated, but I think that the people that are in a program like this, that's probably more than likely where they would be headed. And also in 2007, when we look at violent crimes, there were 6 murders and 157 rapes, 83 robberies, 978 aggravated assaults, 2,322 burglaries, 3,256 domestic violence incidents, 11,737 larcenies. And certainly we're dealing with a group of individuals that maybe when they get desperate, they resort to desperate measures. Finally, Mr. Chairman, I would not think too much about codifying law. It's within the legislature's discretion to repeal at any point. And as I was told once, the legislature giveth and the legislature taketh away. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Deskmate and Mr. Chairman, today. I just wanted to let you know about the program in general. We heard testimony that in several states where this program has been established, that there's a waiting list to get into it. You have to send resumes. You have to get endorsements. This program in Wyoming is volunteer and is still in its infancy. And when you look at some of the figures, there are high dropout rates. But that's because they take everybody that comes to the door and says yes. When you go to other states, as I mentioned, there's a waiting list. And this is an absolute tremendous program, and I would ask for your yes vote. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for, one representative said, would you transfer it from the military to the Department of Education? Well, this is done at Camp Guernsey, and those young people that are there, it's pretty intense. And the reason that it's at Camp Guernsey is because it takes them out of their element, puts them into an element where they will comply or they leave. So, no, I wouldn't recommend that it be transferred from the military. I think they've done a great job. I remember when we first started this program. It's been extremely successful. One comment was, why about the turnover? Well, if you know that the Guard turns over people pretty quick because they go on to different jobs, there's 941 going from the National Guard going to the Far East or Middle East or whatever you call those countries over there. So there is turnover constantly in the Guard, and those folks do try to do the best job they can. As far as how do students get there, they apply. Now, judges cannot send them, but they could advise them, or an attorney can advise them, but they have to apply themselves. You've all had a couple pages sent to you by the military department. It shows that after 14 years, the program has grown to 34 sites in 27 states and Puerto Rico. It also says there are additional 11 states on a waiting list that would like to start the program, while three of the current states would like a second program. Since 1993, over 85,000 students have successfully graduated from the program nationwide. On average, 80% earned their high school diploma or GED, 26% go on to college, 25% enter the military, and the remainder join the workforce and career jobs. Today, 60% of the youth who voluntarily apply for the program are turned away due to funding limitations alone. I know that our military has looked at, can we have students from other states, and it's really from the state of Wyoming. And that's part of the problem. We have a declining student population, and they are trying to recruit. I've talked to the military department about going out and recruiting. They do try. But again, the student that goes there has to want to go there and to change his life. They're not sent. On the average, the youth challenge increases the education level of each student by 2 grade levels. And I think that's important. Dropouts are estimated to contribute $60,000 less to state and federal revenues over the course of their lifetime. That could equate to a lot of billions of dollars. So it's an important program. It's a great program. It may not be doing 100% of what those of us that are informed about it wanted to do, but it needs to continue, and if we can codify it and allow it to move ahead, all the better. On and for the bill.
Question being called. Representative Millen, excuse me.
Thank you. The good chairman from Laramie County answered most of the questions, but and also in response to my good colleague from Fremont County, the Challenge Program is a national program. Remember, it's funded by the Department of Defense. And so in order to get that 60% federal funding, we have a requirement that it has to be administered by the National Guard. So that's another reason we cannot be turning this over to the Department of Education. I think all the other questions were really answered. As far as referrals, I have been to, I mentor at a youth program here in this town, and when you go in, the flyers are in there. Last night at home, I Googled teens with problems, and the website came up. There were several websites, but this website came up that took me right to the Wyoming Youth Challenge program, and you can get lots of information off of that. And, you know, yeah, this is voluntary, but I think that a lot of these people, their family and law enforcement makes a suggestion that they come to this program, and it's really working out good. We need to give it a chance, and we really need your support. And if there's no other questions, I'll call for the question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Cohey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 60 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Senate File 60 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next...
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Yagi.
Privilege of the floor, Mr. Chair.
Privilege granted.
We have up in gallery on my right 16 students from the University of Wyoming. Want to introduce a little bit and tell you these are the WAMI students, the largest class that Wyoming has had. With us we have Dr. Paul Ramsey, the Dean of Medical School, University of Wyoming. We have Wyoming's director of this program, Matt McEachran. These are first-year University of Wyoming students. After they've graduated, second year, they're going to University of Washington. Third and fourth year, they will be all over the WAMI area. And we are just glad to have them here and recognize them. We'll tell you there's a reception at Little America at 5:30 and dinner at 6. And we're glad to have them here.
Thank you.
Welcome to the People's House.
And Mr. Chair, let me make one correction. Dr. Paul Ramsey is from University of Washington. We'll take him from Wyoming, but he is from Washington. And he does have a Wyoming cowboy on, so he's a pretty good guy. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, as everyone fights over the candy back here. You good now? We're going to move Senate Files 56 and 47 in that order and consider them next. 56 and 47.
The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 56. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 56, introduced by the Education Committee, an act relating to school finance. The bill was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Brechtel, Connolly, Kraft, Dirks, Yagi, Lubnow, McKim, McComey, Teeters. Signed, Representative McComey, Chairman. The committee was also referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Harshman, Jorgensen, Peterson, Philp, and Stewart. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Representative Comey, Chairman Comey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 56 do pass. And, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to turn the explanation of the bill over to the good lady from Senate or House District 17 from the land of the sweet water.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair.
Senate File 56 is providing funding for several of the off-model school funding programs that we did last year. We established and funded them during our session last year, and we're asking for their continuation for this second year into our supplemental budget program. There's three programs that we're looking at under this bill. The first one is the Student Enrichment Pilot Project. We're asking for funding of $450,000 for the Student Enrichment Pilot Programming. That's the same amount. We're continuing it for the 2010 year. During the school year of 2008-2009, there were 9 programs funded. There were 50 applicants. This is a highly competitive program that encourages innovation, encourages creativity, encourages districts to come up with ways to reach all students and in different and innovative ways. I've seen my own district apply for and actually be denied monies under this for great programs, but there were so many of them. There were 50 applications received, 9 grants were awarded to programs throughout the state, which totaled the $435,000. If we talk about ways to reach our students, if we talk about ways to encourage creativity, independent thinking, thinking outside of the box, all these things we've discussed, the Student Enrichment Pilot Program does that. The next item that is covered in this particular piece of legislation is the Food Service Supplemental Assistance. And this is continued again for the 2009-2010 school year at the same amount, the $4.5 million. And this is to address the school district deficits in providing food service programs for students. Now, there is one change in this particular area. Based upon the Department of Education's recommendation, now the state aid is going to be the lesser of the district's actual funding deficit or the computed per meal reimbursement. We heard things that districts were making money on food service. They were using it to fund other programs. We have testimony from business managers and food service people throughout the state that actually that does not happen. That they, because of the increased cost of food, the increased cost of labor, they need this money. But we do want to encourage them to be fiscally responsible and to spend wisely. Therefore, we're saying it's the lesser of the two. So it would be very difficult to make money on the food service program with this addition. Then the next one is the instructional facilitator, supplemental assistance for them. And this would augment the amount that is currently in their budget at $5.894 million. That gets us to about 3/4 of a full funding level, which was contained in the 2006 recalibration recommendations. So we're not there yet, but we're continuing along those lines. I know you've heard lots about instructional facilitators. We had a piece of legislation earlier in the session that added to the requirements, recognizing their value as highly effective educational personnel within our districts. And so adding the requirement of 5 years teaching or a master's degree or a board certification, recognizing their value. I know that a lot of emphasis was placed on the effect size. And the instructional facilitators had the greatest one, showing that they currently are ones that are making a great difference. Currently, 45 out of the 48 school districts are participating in this. They have instructional facilitators. They have a high retention rate of them. They are working on this increasingly to make the services even more valuable. Of course, the study that was done actually asked for this program to be continued for 5 years to really get the necessary data. And right now, just the data we're getting at this point in time points to the real effect that instructional facilitators are having. I know we talk about, we spend a lot of money, and does it really work? Does it really go where we hope it would go? And I would submit to you that these three off-model programs really do put their money where hopefully our hearts are. That's basically the bill. I would encourage your support and would stand for any questions.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not on that committee or education committee, but I have a question on this funding. I guess starting with the schools or the school lunch programs. Is this $4.5 million? That is that based on the fact that some are indigent or needy and can't afford to pay their meals? Is that where that's coming from, or is it because they some individual school districts don't have a pricing mechanism to cover their costs of these meals. And then the other thing is, it looks like, you know, that on the bottom of page 5, line 24, and on to the top of page 3, it looks like you can almost induce a subsidy by charging low rates. Isn't that right? I mean, admittedly, it's the lesser of the funding deficit for the preceding year of the application, or amount determined by multiplying under subsection D. I guess I don't understand, but it looks like the moral hazard exists there from the standpoint of they can get some reimbursement without really running it like a business or something. But maybe I'm wrong on that. Maybe it's because this $4.5 million is needed for people that are needy and can't afford to pay for their meals. I don't know. But I'd like to have some questions answered on that.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to take a crack at that, the question as to whether or not this has anything to do with neediness as far as food services go. This has absolutely nothing to do with whether or not a student is going to get a hot meal or not. If you have income requirements or needs, there are free and reduced lunch programs available through the federal government. This is simply subsidizing the overall management of these programs. It has nothing to do with whether or not an individual student is going to have a full belly. And the discussion should not be about whether or not we believe that food services are a good thing or a bad thing. It should be about whether or not we want to subsidize the management of these programs. Everybody's going to get a hot meal. Everybody's going to have plenty to eat. But are we going to subsidize the management of this program?
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have several body. We have four amendments, at least four, to this bill, and one of them is specifically, I think, on food service, and maybe we can move to that. I don't know. A pleasure to the chairman. But I would say on the food service, and we had this debate, these items in this bill were all things we added last year on this floor. Remember, we debated all of them very passionately, and I fought hard against this food service subsidy, and I think I would just say this. I think of all the things in this bill, this is probably the one I would support first. I think it's probably, as I've learned a little more, I think there's a couple things involved. First, your number of free and reduced lunches. The amount of the federal subsidy has remained flat. And how high can you jack your prices up before you kind of price yourself out of the market? So, you know, yeah, we'd like it to run as an enterprise fund, but in some cases that's not quite there, and particularly when you have a lot of kids who are free and reduced lunch and you don't really get some of that support. But I think that debate's to come with an amendment, so I don't know, and maybe the good representative who has that amendment, should we just move on maybe until we get to that, or Mr. Chair, it's your... So that's my comment on food service, and maybe we can move on unless there's some more comments. We're going to come back to it here in a minute.
Representative Harshman, would you like to move committee of the whole amendment number one?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman. I'm not ready to move on to the committee of the whole amendment. Mr. Chairman, there has been handed out some information that would answer some of the questions that will be asked during this debate. And one of them is the dark colored sheet. and it talks about the facilitators. The green colored sheet has got information on the food service. And the supposed to be purple colored sheet, whatever it is, has got information on the student enrichment project. And so if you, as the debate goes on, if you'd want to look at those, why, I think that might be kind of handy. The food service one, which is what we're going to talk about now, on the first part, the first part of the sheet shows you how the $4.5 million is prorated. On the back side, it shows you what the schools are receiving from the federal government and what they're expending and their deficit of how much they go in the hole for what they receive. And then there's some other explanations that go with this. So as we proceed through the bill, I think these might be handy for you.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad the handouts have arrived, because I think those will be helpful to you for all three aspects. I would also call your attention to the food service one, but I would tell you just kind of a little figure to pull out of there is that the per meal reimbursement amount under our legislation for 08-09 and what we are proposing to continue for 09-2010 is 58 cents. So that's the actual calculated amount. I would also like to share with you a quotation from one of our interim studies that was talking about the effectiveness of food service and the need to continue this supplemental aid. And this is from the interim study, which concluded, food service operating costs have increased beyond the ability of most school districts to absorb. Employee salaries, benefits, and food costs are factors which local districts have little or no control. The majority of meals are served to paying students, and federal reimbursement is not sufficient to cover the cost of these meals. So I'd ask you to keep that particular thought in mind while you consider, at this point, the food service.
Representative Harshman, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee of the Whole, I would like to move at this time Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 56 and ask for your favorable consideration. Folks, this amendment was filed several days ago, so it's in your file if it's not on your desk. It looks like the state of Wyoming is going to get somewhere around $183 million in federal stimulus money, as it's called. So I've been investigating a little bit what we can use it. Some of it's passed through right to the districts. Some of it's, with current federal programs. Some of it will come to the states. And some of it is for technology and data and gathering and the whole structure. So this amendment would come out of stimulus money, and I'll just take you through it kind of paragraph through paragraph real quickly. But on page one, it provides a new section 4 there, insert and renumber, page 1, line 12, and then Department of Ed will take a system down to page 16, real-time data access capacity and capability between the department and school districts to provide efficient, timely, and accessible. And they will do that. They'll give us a report it will be finished by June 30th, 2010. Romanet 2, provide technical assistance to school districts. So the department will go out and train school district finance people or whatever it takes to make sure that this all works. Keep in mind, we've spent about $4 million now and really don't have anything to show for it because we haven't really flipped the switch on yet. Line 31, Romanet 3, address agency school finance and student assessment information silos so that the data collection analysis are allowed to cross departmental organizational boundaries, providing dual data collection analysis. All this stuff is in separate silos, and you can't talk to each other. And so it's hard to make decisions as policymakers what's working and what isn't working. And so hopefully we can bridge these silos across and find out if we're actually getting some bang for the buck. Romanet 4, provide training and development for appropriate school district employees So this won't come out of their local funds, the block grant funds. Establish, provide training programs to make sure that the data that's put in is valid and the integrity of the system. And that's with all data entry, to make, you know, whether it's local or whatever it might be. Flipping over to page 2, paragraph B. To the extent the authorized buying within the purposes specified, you can read down the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act 2009, $250,000 to transform the educational data, student information system data, and school finance data to assist the legislature, the department, school districts, and other stakeholders so we can coordinate the statewide education school finance data analysis. One at-will full-time position. So that's a temporary position, though, that basically has benefits. That's what we've done in this body. We've chosen not to fund AWACS because those don't have benefits, and then that creates other problems for our health care delivery. So a person will have benefits, but it'll be a part-time or a time-limited position. Paragraph C on page 2, that we'll get our first report back next fall. And I think basically, paragraph D is that this will be used and be in time and to be used for recalibration. And that's the whole name of the game. And we have about 85,000 students in our state, 80 to 85. And, you know, there's districts just south of us with much larger student populations who are pulling this data together every day. You know what I mean? And so it's, so I think it's a really important thing. And plus, some of this, it looks like what the experts here in state government have told me, that some of this money, this is the only thing it can be used for, is some of this data overhaul and modernization. So I would stand for any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Simpson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like us to step back and take a broader view of this bill and this amendment. This bill has appropriations in it of over 11 million, which is 22 million for the biennium. That's 1 year funding in this bill. This amendment adds another 250 to it. There are other amendments that add more to it also. On and against the amendment for the reasons that follow. We are seeing declining assessed values in the state. As those assessed values decline, the burden on the general fund to supplement the school foundation program increases. So the lower the assessed value, the more the general fund obligation increases to meet what we already have in K-12 education, which is pretty high. That's in the model, and these are off model. These are things that have not been constitutionally mandated or determined to be by the court to be constitutionally mandated. We have recalibration coming up next year that would be effective in 2011. When we are talking about attaching the stimulus dollars that have that bill was passed, 6 days ago. We don't even know whether we are jeopardizing those dollars by passing a statutory enactment. We would hope that we are enabling a switch of funds here from school foundation program to the stimulus dollars, but that lasts as long as the stimulus dollars exist. And is it the end of 2010? So don't simply think that you can pass the amendment because stimulus dollars are coming in. You have to think beyond that into 2011 and 2012 in terms of we could very likely be paying these dollars out of the general fund. What happens in recalibration with the off-model stuff? Why didn't this come last year, all of this whole bill, as one whole chunk of $22 million last year? We are looking hard at budget issues and what we're going to do this session And I would ask you to look very closely and consider. I certainly would love these programs to continue to exist. There is a need. But there is a limit to what we can do. And we are starting to approach those limits. We have seen huge revenue increases over the last 7 or 8 years, and we're going to see steep decreases. And when that happens, those programs that we subsidize in good times, we either have to figure out a way to subsidize them in bad times or let them go. And by subsidizing them in bad times, that means we're taking money from somewhere else or borrowing it from our future. This is the time to start thinking about making those hard choices that are coming. And how long will that happen, I don't know. But our school funding model is one of the tops in the nation. We have been very fortunate to be able to do many things that we wanted to do. But I would ask you to please really think hard about what is proposed in this bill and these amendments. It pulls at your heart, and we want to provide what we can, but we also have some fiscal restraint. Thank you.
Representative Stepson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question sort of directed narrowly at this amendment, and that is I was thinking back to the amendment to the budget bill that we passed on data gathering, and I was just wondering, is there any differences other than the source of funds between that amendment and the one being offered as part of this bill?
Anyone else for the first time before? Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm speaking on and against the amendment and for the bill. I want to remind the body, and I think this answers the last speaker, that this is the dollar figure that we voted against as an amendment to the budget. And nothing has changed since then. We in the Education Committee have decided that as two of the interim topics that we would like to address are, first, the organization of the Department of Education, you know, thinking about money that is being spent for schools going for administration, and if we think that's the best way that our tax dollars are being spent. And second, thinking about the reporting that we are getting from the Department of Education. This $250,000 goes to the Department of Education for a chief information officer and for new reporting. What we'd like to do in the Education Committee is to look very seriously at those two elements. And what I'd like to suggest is that give us the time to do that during the interim. And if that's something that we decide that is good and necessary, bring back a bill where we can look at testimony, and then we'll bring a bill next year. So again, I'm on and against this amendment, even though I think that in the long run, it might be something good and necessary. But give us the time to be able to think about it. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm torn, but I'm not that torn, actually, on and against the amendment, although I wanted to say that I, with great respect to the bringer of the amendment and their idea, because I think this idea is definitely a good one, and it's most certainly needed, real-time data, and data is very important to how we make decisions and how we make policy decisions, and without data, you're making decisions in the dark. But ultimately, I fall on the side of it really wouldn't matter what amendment you put in this bill. I'm not going to support the amendment, and I will not support the bill.
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Harshman for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just had to stretch my legs. Mr. Chairman, several questions. The good speaker, who we all have admired his brilliance and all of his legislation, has gone through. And and has done such an eloquent job and a great job of leading us, but I would reject his arguments that it got a little bit distracted about lower assessed valuations, ongoing funding, into the bill, $22 million. I'd like us to just come back to this amendment. This is one time, $250,000 of the federal stimulus money that can only be used for this type of activity. If it doesn't come through or it can't be used, this will not happen. Okay, it's important to realize that. I think the second thing is that if we do head into a downturn, it's going to be very important that we have a more efficient, leaner, more cost-effective system. And you only do that through data, I mean, in technology. That's it. The second thing I would, you know, there's, I think, a perception on this floor that our school districts are burdened with all kinds of reporting information from the department. The department simply gathers data that we have in statute. And the only data that is really gathered are information on instructional facilitators, because we request that in outside the model. Bills like this, where we have special off-model things, districts have to report. But as far as other student datas and demographics, some of that's federal. But the only things that are reported is what we require, which is very little, and what the federal government, which happens to be more than what we require. So there's not that much data required by the state. And I think that's out there like, oh, the Department of Ed, the big bad Department of Ed is requiring all this information. This information is really for us. So when we set policy, when we come back to recalibration, we have some idea, because the good speaker is right. See, because local resources, the 25 mills locally and the 6 county mills, those are what fund your local schools. Then you have Campbell, Sweetwater, Sublette. They go above their local needs, and so they donate to the rest of us, and that's called recapture. Districts like Natrona are close, but districts like Albany, Goshen, Laramie, they don't even come close to supporting their education on their own, and so the state guarantees them to this level. And the good speaker is absolutely right. Right here are local property values. That's supporting the Campbells and the Tronas. All of our local, there's 31 mills, and there's 12 statewide mills. And when those 31 mills go down, education costs don't go down. That means the state foundation guarantee has to go up to keep them at that level. So the speaker is absolutely right, but it has nothing to do with this amendment. And so I'd bring you back to this amendment. We do not collect very much data. We are heading into probably the most crucial recalibration, because we are going to be in a situation where we have declining resources. We have a guarantee at this point, and at some point we're going to have to be like our state government. We're going to have to kind of pick and choose. And we're going to have to pick what works, what doesn't, what's fluff, what isn't. And I hope we make those decisions on good data. Not just coming down here and saying, my district, And that's unfortunately how we make a lot of these decisions. And so who can argue against data? Stand up and take the mic. Who can argue about good decision making with good data? Stand up and take the mic. There's no argument. And if you think that it's a privacy issue or some other, once again, that argument just does not fly. We have a system of 85,000 students. It's the smallest statewide system in America. As I said, 3 or 4 districts within an hour's drive of here that have more students than ours. There's no reason for us not to have this information as policymakers, as the folks who the Supreme Court entrusted to make these decisions on quality and quantity and what's in and what's out. So with that, unless there's any further questions, looks like there might be one comment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I have nothing to say about the merits of this bill. I couldn't even carry the sponsor's undergarments when it comes to the merits of this bill. My objection.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman. Depends how long I've been wearing them, Mr. Chairman.
So noted.
My objection is the same as the speaker's. The stimulus bill has only been in existence 6 days. Nobody in this room, I question whether anybody in Congress understands what's in it yet. Senator
that spoke to us the other day said it's a stack that high. Nobody's read it. Nobody knows what's in it. What conditions and strings are there on that money? If we take one piece of money or even pass legislation that directs itself toward one piece of money, does that have some correlative and offsetting effect with respect to some other money? And how are we going to get done? 6 days out of the stimulus package, and here we are appropriating money. We're writing a bill. We're putting the name of the stimulus package in here, and we're starting to appropriate money and saying it's coming out of the stimulus program, and we're going to start mainlining it right into this stuff. And I say the speaker's right. I say we need a central gatekeeper. We need somebody that understands the totality of this, the implications, whether it's one-time money or continuing money, what effect appropriating for this money has on some other money, how are states going to fit it all together, how our budget fits in with that to make it work, and all that needs to be worked out. And until that can be done, I would urge this body to, the speaker said it best, to resist any attempt to start appropriating this money and mainlining it into these departments in a place where we can't get it back. We can't say, oops, we got a problem here, it'll be too late. So on and against the amendment.
Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had the good fortune to rise very early this morning, and I heard the U.S. Secretary of Education on this early morning television program, and I was, as I was running around eating my raisin, eating my cereal. I heard him say that a good part of the stimulus plan, in fact, is directed towards, we radically have to change education in this country. There are so many of us that have expressed frustration this session, and in fact, a good part of it is directed towards changing that abysmal dropout number. That said, the amendment before you, if I were to prioritize those segments of this bill, and hallelujah, the speaker finally said what many of us have been thinking, and that is, this is about money. And believe me, when we come back next year, all of our decisions will be enhanced if they are based on good data. So quite frankly, personally for me, I prefer the amendment to the whole bill. It is my number one priority because it is the question of directly going into the existing models as they are applied all across the state in our school districts, getting that data, interpreting it, because that's what they will be doing with this, is interpreting the data, so that when we come back next year, we will be making informed decisions about what we have created with our current school model. It's my number one priority. And as we finish talking about this amendment, then we can talk about the priorities in terms of the other issues that are contained in the bill. But number one, we have to make our decisions based on good data, and that's what this amendment does. And for that reason, I'll be supporting it.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question for the bringer of the motion or the proposed amendment. If I heard him correctly, this is going to go whether we get any money out of the stimulus package or not. That's the way I read it. But what I thought I heard him say is that if we don't get the stimulus money, it doesn't happen. So I think that needs to be clarified. And then I'd also have a second part of that question. I believe this is the same thing we discussed during the budget review and discussion of the education components of the budget. And I want to make sure I heard the same argument then that I think I'm hearing now about the merits of this data.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Who can possibly be against gathering data and helping us with information? This body is starving for information to try and answer some of the complaints that we have relative to K-12 education. The problem that I identify here is the way that we're doing this on page 2, lines of 3 through 5, we are appropriating money out of the Reinvestment Act, of which we don't know how it's to be handled. And one of the threats there are to that is the threat that, as my understanding of general information, not specific information, but of general information on this new Reinvestment Act, is that the funds that they are distributing to the states are supposed to be in addition to those funds already being expended by the state. And so are we putting ourselves in the position then of saying that if we don't pass this, or if we do pass this and it's not considered as supplemental, then what is the Department of Education then to do? Open it for discussion, and I don't mean it to be critical.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to start with my desk mate here because I wanted you to actually listen to what he said. Oh, we need a gatekeeper. Oh, we don't know where it's coming. Oh, I don't know anything. Oh, we don't know nothing. It has to be appropriated. I don't know. That was kind of the whole thing. Be fearful of it because we don't know it could tie our hands and we don't have a gatekeeper and we have no idea. Okay. That's how the only thing I can answer that. I would say fear not. Now, I'd like to go over to my good mentor and chairman from Natrona County who asked the simple question, if we do not have this stabilization money, will this program go on? No. This is not a generally or school foundation funded program. No. So it kind of answers the good gentleman from Sheridan County that this is an addition. This is an addition, and I would tell you, in appropriations, ladies and gentlemen, of all the millions of dollars going to education, one part of it, $250 million, will go to the states called Statewide Longitudinal Data Systems. Institute of Education Sciences received $250 million. Competitive grants, states will help states implement and use statewide longitudinal data system, the 10 essential elements, and so on. That's going to go to this. I'm telling you, our folks in state government have been working on this. And I asked about this whole bill. Well, can we do food service out of this money? Nope, can't do it. I asked about instructional facilitators. Can we fund instructional facilitators? Nope, can't do it. But this was one piece where we could fund this. And then as you look at Wyoming's share of that statewide longitudinal data system, we're going to get about $3.145 million for technology grants improvement through the Department of Education, through the State Department is going to get that. Then there's another $25 million that goes right to the school districts for special education. Another $26 million for Title I goes right, flows through to the school districts. But there's $3.1 million for this kind of stuff, for data, because it's so important. And so I would, the sky's not falling. You can't appropriate this. That's what we do here is appropriate money. And it'll be sitting there, and if everything flows in the way we think it is, whether we come back later in June or July or we set up another mechanism through the budget, then it will flow. But I would, if we're going to go for the next 4 days and say, we can't do anything, the sky is falling, I'm trying to get out ahead of a little bit of this, and so I'd encourage your support on this deal. So sorry for my, I got so animated, but it was just getting so, I just got caught up in the rhetoric, and I just thought the sky was falling for a minute, so I wanted to bring us back down to that. So thank you. I'd stand for any more questions, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It seems to me that we're spending enormous amounts on education. I think if you figure it out, it's about $14,000 a student in the classroom, and if you figure all the expenses, including running the Department of Education and the building, it's well over $36,000 per student. My question is, how come we have to bribe people to get this information, whatever it is?
Representative Harshman.
That's a very good question, Chairman. I think he's hit right to the point. And we've spent $4 million of our own state resources on this, and we just have not flipped the light switch on. And this $250,000 will make sure that $4 million doesn't go to waste. And it's really that simple, as once again we head into the most important recalibration we might ever see. And I just think it's going to be really important to have some good data. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hope we haven't had to bribe them because we just haven't required it yet.
Speaker Simpson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Without that fire, I don't know how the Mustangs would win. But
If this was third reading on the budget again or second reading, I'd vote for the amendment because I do think that this is a critical component of that. But I can't support the $250,000 when it's tied to all the other stuff in the bill. If there's some other way to figure out how to do it, I'm happy to look at that, and I'm much more convinced now of the necessity of this particular amendment and this component than I was during the budget. I'm not sure why that is, but it's just the little fly on top of the elephant, and I can't support it.
Representative Harshman.
This is the House version of a filibuster, Mr. Chairman, but we'll soon vote. I really appreciate it. And there's going to be amendments on all sections of 56. And this might be the only thing that comes out of this little bill. So I think it would be the best part. And it is a handsome fly. And and a very clean fly and a very necessary fly. And so I'd encourage your support.
Representative Brown.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I would just say, if this money from this economic stimulus bill can only be used for this, and it's only for that, and it's got all these strings, all of which I defy anybody in here to verify in black and white, then it'll still be there whenever we do what we do when we get a handle on this whole thing. And to do it right now, I'm not saying the sky's falling in, but I will tell you this. Ignorance is bliss on and against the amendment.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One last question of the bringer of this amendment. If I was assured that if this amendment passed and then there would be no support for the balance of what's in this proposed bill, I'd have a different feeling. I got a notion if this one goes down, then the next one will be the next hottest item. And I'd like a little assurance that if this is the number one priority, that I hear that clearly again, and that may influence my support for this portion of the three amendments.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, to answer that, I think the next amendment, I think, is directed at food service and tutors to remove them. The third amendment will be an ECA switch. We'll talk about that, similar fund switch, and then a gifted and talented program at the end to remove that. So the next several amendments are, two of the next three are removals. I would say this, that data is bliss. And so I'd encourage your support. So thank you.
Do I hear the question?
Yes.
Question being called. We are on Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The chair is in doubt. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. Oh, I can see this. Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1 has failed the House. Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Moving on to more exciting things. I move first reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 56, and I would like to explain it to the body. I know you've all been very heavily lobbied on this amendment, but I would like for all of us to try and take all of that influence out of our minds for just a minute and try and listen to some reason, some logic as to why I'm bringing this here today. Essentially, what my amendment does is it pulls out the food service provision in the bill. And I think it's extremely important to know, as I get started here, that this bill is not going to provide one single meal for one single student. It is not going to reduce the cost of a meal by 56 cents. What the bill does do is it subsidizes those people that are not running efficient programs, and it subsidizes them in an extremely perverse way, in a way that doesn't make any logical sense if you think about it. Because we are going to reimburse those districts for the loss that they generate, the deficit. Now, what is the incentive in that? We are incentivizing districts to lose money in their programs. And we have programs in the state of Wyoming that are self-sufficient, that do not require any sort of general fund appropriation out of that local district. So at the very beginning, at the very heart of it, I think that this is quite frankly the worst piece of educational policy that I've come across since I've been elected, because we are encouraging people to run bad programs. The other thing that I have a huge concern about is if you look at the amount of, and this is all about money. That's what this is about. This is about getting more money back to the districts. And if you look at the amount of reserves that the districts currently have, there are over, this is staggering, but there are over $131 million in reserves in the districts. And that's not capital construction. That's not major maintenance. That is money that those districts can cut a check to anybody in their general fund right now, $131 million. And if we look at the last 3 years, the increase of those revenues, and I would be happy to share this data with anybody, the increase in those revenues has increased from 2005 to 2006, the amount of money that those districts have increased by 16%. From 2006 to 2007, it increased by 22%. So as we progress and as we recalibrate and as we add these external cost adjustments to this block grant, the percentage of carryover is increasing, and that does not even include the $51 million of pre-1997 revenues that we allow the districts to hang on to. So I would stand for questions on the amendment, but I don't want to hear anyone get up to the mic and say that this is about little Charlie over here who needs to make sure that he has a full tummy, because that's not what this is about. And I would stand for questions.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll refrain from talking about Charlie or Susie or anybody else. I'll talk about money also. I will tell you that the money we put into this food service, we are not giving them the greater amount of the deficit versus the per meal. We're giving them the lesser. So what this is doing, if we allow the language to stay that was recommended, is that we will actually be giving the lesser of a district's actual funding deficit or their computed per meal reimbursement. And I'll tell you, I'll just share with you some information from just one school district and one rather large school district who said this funding actually allows them to significantly reduce the subsidy from the general fund to the food service fund. So not only are these people not making money on this or using it to fund other programs, they're pulling money from their general fund even with this money that we have given them to subsidize the food service fund. And I shared with you when we talked earlier a lot of reasons for that. Food costs, employee costs, all of those things that I don't want to repeat and I don't want to talk about again. But this one particular district, in the prior year, their actual subsidy from their general fund to their food service program was $211,000 and $877,000 over and above. These folks need this money if indeed they are going to operate food service programs for little Charlie and everybody else. So I would ask you to consider that and really consider leaving this in at least for this next year until we get back to the to our budget session. Thank you.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, if everybody would take out their green sheet. Turn to the second page. You'll see school district amounts, and it's got every school district in the state listed. Shows the revenue they receive, the expenditures they report, and the amount of the difference between what they receive and what they report is shown as a deficit amount. That totals $7,364,004. If you go back to the other side of the page, it talks about, it shows the number of meals. It shows the qualifying meals times the per meal reimbursement, the financial assistance amounts, and the percentage of the total, and then the prorated financial assistance from the state that totals $4.5 million. So you have a pretty good breakout of where the money's going, why it's going there, and are they efficient? Are they not efficient? It could be said here, you see some pretty diverse figures, but districts that have more free and reduced lunch people, otherwise those students that come from homes where they can't really don't have a lot of money, then they qualify for more of that type of assistance. And their students pay less, so that's for the lunch program, so that's where these deficits run up. They're charged less than the other students. And that's what that's about, and I thought that might help with an explanation with your discussion.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One other point I would like to bring to the body's attention, that for the last 100 years in the state, school lunch programs have been assumed to be self-sufficient, and our model, which has been approved by our Supreme Court, if you turn and open your statutes and take a look at the attachment A and you look under food services, it says assumed to be self-sufficient. That's the way it's always been, and I think that's the way it should be. The districts have some skin in the game, and there is plenty, like I said before, $131 million in reserves in these districts. Plenty of money for them to subsidize their own poor management. I would ask you to vote aye on the amendment.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question. When it was discussed, I think it was on Title I, you know, the free and reduced lunch program. If that accounts for some of the deficits that the districts are running, I'd like to know how much money they get from the federal government or we get, and is that 100% reimbursement or a lesser percentage thereof? And then the only other thing I wanted to say was that, you know, this, if it really is no direction towards any meal or providing a number of meals, this is all administration. This is bureaucracy at its absolute worst. And I know we can't always run government like a business, but this is hard to even imagine that we hold harmless programs that are so inefficient. And then we wonder why taxpayers ask us, what's the deal with education? Why are we spending this much on education? This is an example of something has gone wrong. Now, I realize that at some point you can't probably raise the price of a meal, you know, for the folks that can pay for it. Probably there's a ceiling there. But then they have to look at what they're providing then as far as a meal goes. But we cannot continue to hold harmless to this extent, even though it's only $4.5 million. But I think this is for 1 year.
Anyone else for the first time? Representative Hales.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you look at your green sheets, the deficit amount is run by every county. You know, I'm willing to agree that there are probably a few counties that might be doing a better job, but I cannot imagine that every county in the state is doing a bad job with their food service. From my perspective, in the center of the state, there are a number of programs that are being run, and those children, that's their only meal of the day. And I think we could work on the way the programs are run, but I certainly do not want to take the food away from those kids who have one meal a day. Thank you.
Representative Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It would be nice if we could run schools like a business in every way, but the truth is we're talking about children. We also have districts that have multiple buildings, and some of those buildings are far apart, and they can't bus the food 34 miles, nor can they bus it 10 miles and still have it be quality food. One of the districts that I serve has four different kitchens, and it just takes a minimal amount of staff in each kitchen. They or not feed the kids. There are some ways that it's just not equal across the state. This particular district charges more than any other school, any other district in the state. They're already charging more. They can't reduce their staff. They can't run it as an efficient business. If they could, they'd have one kitchen. Another thing that they face is that the food subsidy commodity program is extremely undependable. They said they're so far away that by the time it gets down to them on the list, there's hardly anything left. I think that this is one of those areas that we do need to continue the way we're going. We need to pay this, and then when we have recalibration, figure out where we stand then.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thought I explained to the body very clearly that nobody is going to go without a school lunch if we pull this out. That is not the center of the debate, and that is not a good intellectual argument as to being opposed to this amendment. As far as the deficit goes, if you have a district, and there are districts in the state of Wyoming that have self-sufficient programs, if you're one of those districts that has a self-sufficient program, the first thing you're going to do after we pass this bill is lower the price of your meals to the point where you can receive the maximum deficit allowed by law. And that is a bad incentive. On and for the amendment.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Last year I fought this, and I guess as I've learned more, and I talked about it earlier, but I think this is probably the best part of the bill. If this was the only part to survive, I'd sleep pretty good at night. Less than a dollar subsidy per meal, and the bottom line is, it's like in our Medicaid and everything else, it's the federal reimbursements haven't kept pace. I would just tell you from my experience, and I remember when they brought school breakfast to our school, I was one of the ones spoke against it. What the heck are the parents doing? I mean, why aren't parents feeding these kids? And I'll just tell you, I mean, all these kids don't have parents, and I'm not, a lot of kids, the only thing they eat is at school. I mean, I got kids show up Monday morning, they haven't eaten since Friday lunch. I mean, they're kids that just don't have anything. And you got some real knuckleheads and absentee AWOL parents that are just gone from the scene. We have 200 kids that are homeless in our county alone, 200 students. So I just think, you know, as I've learned more about this deal, there's a point, yeah, we could charge $4 or $5 a meal, and then nobody's there, and then the ones who really need it can't afford it. And, you know, so you kind of get into this thing. I don't know what the answer is. I think we'll find the answer as we study it a little bit through recalibration. It's less than a dollar a meal subsidy. Most of the people that have the greatest deficit are those who have large, small districts. I mean, small schools cost a lot. We've chosen to keep our small schools in this state. We could have one county high school in every school district, get along just fine. Bus kids from who knows where. But we've chosen not to do that. And some of it costs money. The other thing, it's the ones with the greatest deficit are the ones with the most kids who are in poverty. And that's as you go down through that. So just keep those things in mind as we look through these components. Not that my vote, I could only sway 16 of you last time. This would probably be the only thing I'd really stand up and argue for. I think the next part's instructional facilitators. I'm going to sit down on that. I don't know what the next part I'm going to get up and argue against. But anyway, out of the things that came to us out of the joint education bill, this is the only one that I would latch on to. So, against the amendment for this little part of the bill. Thank you.
Chairman Landon.
Mr. Chairman, I wasn't going to speak on this, but then I heard a story that I have to share, because we had a similar situation in our school district years ago. I was on a school board where we had a number of different schools and we had a number of different kitchens, and our costs were out of sight, were out of control. And we did something about that on the school district level, and that is we consolidated those kitchens and we started taking meals to various schools. And those elementary schools that we took meals to, as they got hot meals, and it just worked out real well. We cut our costs a lot. About 5 years after that, the costs seemed to be going up, and also the federal government came in at that time and said, you guys can't be serving so much fat with your meals. And they wanted us to adjust that. And the cooks came in and whined and moaned and said that it's just impossible and so on. And one board member happened to be a veterinarian who ran feedlots. And he'd finally heard enough and he said, come on now, it's just a feed ration. And when you really break it down, is there is some truth to that. It is a feed ration. And I think that it is obviously being solved on the local level in those places that want to solve it. I just went through page 2 real quickly, identifying those school districts that were serving around 80 to 90,000 meals, and then looking at how much their deficits were. One school district is $1.54, and in the same county, the next school district was 49 cents. One school district, they are running a deficit of 4 cents, and the high was $2.23, and that was in one of our richest counties. Unbelievable enough that as if they don't, and it's primarily a reason because they charge such low revenues. So I just think that this is the kind of thing that we pump more money into it, and it just is a reason that school districts can delay solving the problem themselves. And probably the thing I'm bothered most about in this, Mr. Chairman, is somehow we've got away from the constitutional mandate in 16.6 that we can only help the poor. And that's the part that bothered us a lot, is that we were asking all the citizens in our school district to subsidize those that could well afford to send their kids with an extra 50 cents a meal. And so we resisted that. Until we kept expectations that parents were to step up to the plate here, is we knew that it wouldn't happen. And so for the amendment.
Representative Cohey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, ladies and gentlemen, this is food service. When I went to school, maybe that was some time ago, mine came in a sack, brown in color. President Ford said it best, that government couldn't bottle beer for less than $20 a six-pack. Now, I realize there's probably been some inflation since the time he said that, but if you think about that, why is government doing what it's doing? I'm a fan of the Yellow Pages theory. Yellow Pages theory is defined when you can look in the Yellow Pages of a phone book, and if you can find a service, why is government operating it? This is a perfect place for private enterprise discussion. If districts, and maybe they don't have the authority to do that, but if school districts and the boards of trustees are not satisfied, or if this is costing them too much, why not a little bit of out-of-the-box thinking and find somebody that can do the program correctly, properly, and at the right kind of expense? It possibly might be, this could be an interim study for our education committee to say, couldn't somebody else do this just a little bit better? Because I can tell you that if a school district, in my interpretation of many school districts, probably even the one that I happen to come from, that if it can more than likely be done at a far, far cheaper expense than what it's being done for. If they're saying that the subsidy is costing them too much, I can tell you about 1,000 ways why it's costing too much. But that's from a business point of view, and that wouldn't have any, as I've heard here, why would a business point of view have anything to do with a governmental operation? In favor of the amendment.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to belabor the point at all, but I would like to call your attention to that first page. It shows one school district that didn't operate at a deficit. The second page, there are two that did not receive financial assistance. I happen to be intimately acquainted with that one district that doesn't operate at a deficit, and I don't even want to go into how they manage that in terms of quality of food and in terms of really providing nourishment. I think that's why we get concerned when we talk about should we be looking at this as a business or as a, yeah, it is a business, but it's the business of children. And that's all I'm going to say about kids. I will tell you also, I think it would be an excellent interim topic because when we did discuss having private entities coming in, we heard a lot about school food service employees and their jobs. It's not something that can be debated at this point in time. I would ask you to resist this amendment to allow us the second year of funding, and then when we come back for our budget session, possibly we will have that additional data and we will have done the interim study work and can present a different option. But I would urge you at this point in time to resist the amendment and support the bill. Thank you.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would urge you to vote aye for this amendment for this reason. Number one, understand this. Free and reduced lunch is a federal program. So any kid that can't afford it, they're being taken care of. All this is dealing with are those kids that are above that level. These are the kids that actually are paying the normal price that the school district has set. When you're running a deficit, you raise it a dime, you raise it a nickel until you can bring it up. What I would urge you to do is look at some of these counties, and if you look on the second page of the green sheet, that at the top it says school district deficit amounts, what highlights to me that this is being run sort of interestingly, look at the county that where natural gas comes from. This is a county that kept millions upon millions of dollars in recapture money from going to other school districts. That district, who has millions of dollars, is supposedly running like a huge deficit. Well, it's obvious what's going on there. They're keeping their amount low, and they can compensate that with other funds that they have. So when that county is running huge deficits, it clearly shows you that this is not being run like an enterprise fund. And an enterprise fund is a very simple enterprise to run. You raise it by a nickel, by a dime, and you find that amount that the consumer will pay. There is a point that you get to a point of saturation where the person will not pay, and especially if you have open campus, they're going to leave to go to a different place. But if you have closed campus, it makes a difference. I'd urge you to vote aye on this. It appears to me that these deficits just aren't accurate. Thanks.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, as far as the talk of an interim committee study and these types of things, this was the result of an interim committee study and a task force that brought this information, studied this, found out this information and data, and came back with a recommendation that if you look behind the pages we've been talking about, the bill that implemented this. And that was a result of an interim study and a task force. But when that happened, times weren't quite so tough. We're anticipating that times are going to be very tough. And that's probably correct. So what I'm trying to tell you, folks, is you're going to have to vote your conscience on this. The good gentleman that brought the amendment has talked about I'm sure the school districts are not going to let these kids go hungry. But what kind of meals they're going to be getting and what goes along with that, I don't know. Because the federal government, as I said, if you look on the top of the very first page, I believe it is, to get this $11 million or $10,800,000 in federal dollars, the state of Wyoming right now is putting up $436,259. And so we're supplementing that now with $4.5 million to make sure that these lunches are adequate and served to those that really need it. On and against the amendment.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess just a follow-up question to that last point. In the materials that have been provided to us, there is a one-page report. And I remember when we talked about this last year and we were assured, yeah, give us this 1 year of funding and we'll come back to you. We'll look at this and we'll come back to you. And so here we are. And if this is the report that we're given in response to that request, it says, let's standardize accounting structure and give us more money. And to me, that's not an answer to the questions that were laid out before the education community when we talked about this last year. And so if there is more, I guess I'd like to know that. But the one page that I see in front of me provides probably more questions than answers.
Representative Harshman.
Well, and it just goes back, Mr. Chairman, thank you, just to having good data. And that's all I got to say on this. So thank you.
Question being called. All those in favor?
Mr. Chair.
Oh, excuse me, Representative Kraft.
Pursuant to House Rule 13-3A, I would like to ask that the ayes and noes be recorded on this vote.
There is a second. The body will stand at ease for a minute. The body will come to order. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bagby.
No.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
No.
Blake.
No.
Bonner.
No.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
Aye.
Bird.
No.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Carson.
No.
Childers.
Aye.
Cohey.
Aye.
Connolly.
Kraft. No.
Davison.
No.
Dirks.
No.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Esquivel.
No.
Gilmore.
No.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
No.
Hales.
No.
Hallinan.
Aye.
Hammonds.
No.
Harshman.
No.
Harvey.
No.
Illaway.
No.
Yagi.
Aye.
Jorgensen excused. Landon.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Lubno.
No.
Madden. McKim.
No.
McComey.
No.
Mercer.
Aye.
Meyer.
No.
Miller.
Aye.
Millen.
No.
Moniz.
No.
Patton.
No.
Peasley.
Aye.
Patterson.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Philp.
No.
Korberg.
Aye.
Roscoe.
No.
Simlick.
Aye.
Shepperson.
Aye.
Stewart.
No.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Thompson.
No.
Throne. Wallace.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Illaway? Aye to no?
No to aye.
No to aye?
No,
no to aye.
Third.
Are there any other changes? Barbudo? Aye to no? Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 29 ayes, 30 noes, 1 excused.
Committee of the Whole, number 2, has failed the House. Representative Pedersen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 3 to House Bill 56 and will begin my explanation. This is just a little amendment here, probably not too much discussion. What we're going to do is, what we've done is we've said that we're going to fund this ECA dollars, and what this is a mechanism for funding that external cost adjustment through possible federal means. I'd like to bring up a couple of points of discussion before they're even brought up on the floor so we can get through with it. The most important piece on this is that there is possibilities for this to actually be part of a federal funding piece. If you look down at C there, to the extent the governor determines that the implementation of subsection A of this section would result in a reduction in funding received in the state under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009, subsection A of this section shall not be implemented. If this interferes with or in any way, shape, or form hinders our ability to get any federal funds, then this particular piece would then be null and void. So we can get that one out of the way. The other piece that's important is that this is also not effective if we get the House bill or Senate file ones to be enacted into law. This is a catch-all that we need to take care of. We've already said we're going to do this. This is a hopefully a different funding mechanism. We'll find out the dollars are eligible. And I don't see the mics crowded, so I'll call for the question.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the amendment, there's too much uncertainty about what this means and what we need to do and what strings might be attached. If you vote against this, are you casting a vote against the external cost adjustment? That's a rhetorical question, but we have the external cost adjustment in our budget, and it comes from the school foundation program. We can look at taking this same concept and plugging it into the Senate third reading amendment that on the stimulus package. Who knows what will happen with the conference committee on the budget, but that Senate amendment gives us the flexibility potentially to try and work this language into there. And I'd prefer to see it in the budget than in a separate bill, because that's where the money is already. And this will duplicate what we have in the budget in terms of the dollars out of the foundation program. But what we don't have in the budget is this language about that ties it to the stimulus bill. I only believe that there will be additional details to come as to how the money flows. You can read the congressional record. You can look at whose opinion or whoever's writing the latest thing about how the stimulus package works. But we probably won't know for a while, and I prefer to see it in the budget.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just got off the phone with the coordinator dealing with the stimulus package and information for Wyoming. And as you know, we've been having meetings throughout the last week about what we think is coming down. And we have all the different agency heads and a designated individual working on this information coming from the federal government. And I was prepared to hand out a 3-page synopsis that kind of highlighted some of those areas. And that has changed in the last hour. And they are now getting prepared to do another document for tomorrow morning. So if you can be a little more patient with this situation, there is a lot of information that has not been sifted through. We do not have any definites whatsoever. And it's very possible that each of us as individuals, that we get into an area that we are keen on and we find information. It could possibly be right, but we don't know that. And I think as a collective body, we can't make those decisions on current legislation that we're discussing today as to what it might be. And I think that we're looking at how can we take advantage of this stimulus package while we're out of session
And the direction that we might be able to take and what the executive branch may be able to do and what we may be able to do as legislators. So I just be calm about this process, and I will try to get you more information tomorrow so that we can further the discussion. Thank you.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and that just flows into my point. Are we ready? How on earth can we start appropriating stimulus money here and there and the other place? Did you read this thing that got distributed? It's incomprehensible. And the good chairman of the Appropriations Committee tells us within the last hour all the rules changed. And we want to sit down here and start making black letter appropriations of these stimulus funds for things. And if you read this, it says the governor shall... For each fiscal year, the governor shall use 81.8% of the state's allocation under Section 1400D for the support of elementary, secondary, and post-secondary education. Are we ready to take some money and appropriate it right now and lock our governor into that string that comes attached to that money? I just urge you to vote against the amendment. Vote against anything that tries to appropriate stimulus money until we know what we're doing. On and against the amendment.
Do I hear the question?
Oh, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Harshman, of course.
You know, I think it's important to take a breath. I got pretty long there. About ran out. I think here's the deal. We have $15 million in this educational stimulization fund. We know that. It's not any hocus pocus. It's nothing magical. And I just gave you a copy of the congressional record. You can see that it is the governor who spends it. The governor will release the money. And it says the parts I underlined as I gave that to you in the state's through the state's primary, elementary, and secondary funding formula. I mean, we've got smart people looking at this. I didn't just dream this up. I've been asking this stuff for a week, and this is the best advice we got. And if we can do it, it's going to save us $15 million. Now, I don't know how you feel about that, but this money ain't going to go to anything else, and we sure as heck don't want to start new programs with it. And it would just simply supplant in our funding formula, $15 million. Now, if we want to withdraw, I don't know what we want to do. I don't know. But anyway, I'm all about saving $15 million. $15 million. So, on and four. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Pedersen.
Mr. Chairman, I was sitting here thinking of a couple of things. And one is, we could just pass this and then not pass the budget. I don't know if you guys... I'm just making trouble. You know, I would end this with something along the lines of unintended consequences, slippery slope, it's for the kids, vote your conscience. But instead of saying all that, I'll just say I withdraw the, this amendment.
Mr. Chairman, objection.
Mr. Representative Harshman, objection so noted.
As a co-sponsor, I just want to talk one more time on this amendment. I think it's important to realize, folks, some of the arguments said, oh, we have this in the budget. Oh, we got this there. Well, we have a lot of stuff in the budget. We have property tax proposals in the budget. We have windmill studies in the budget. We got all kinds of legislation in the budget. That's what the budget is legislation. And this is simply an attempt, I would hope now, and I want to get, before we bring this back tomorrow on second reading, that we have some assurance that our conference committee is going to bring this budget amendment to the budget to save us, our citizens, 15 million bones. That's what it's about. We're just going to turn the money back. I guess if we, whatever. But so I guess we'll withdraw it at this time. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Amendment number 3 to Senate file number 56 has been withdrawn. Representative Harshman.
Yeah, I know. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm wearing you out as well as myself. Okay, this is the best part. So get ready. There's a handout in your tray. This shows you the amount of funding distributed to districts for gifted and talented programs. You can see what your district gets, $2.4 million. Now, we passed a budget amendment last year, $450,000 for enrichment. Now, you'll hear how important this is, and I've read how important it is, but it went to 9 school districts, some for just a week, some for a whole year, some for whatever. I would just submit to you that there's enough money. $450,000, that's 8, 9 good teachers you could pay for with that money. And so, you know, no doubt it's good, but at some point, you know, we're going to have to make decisions, and I think this is a time to make the decision on this one. So I'd stand for any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lubnow, Chairman Lubnow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pull out the purple sheet that was distributed with it that says actions. Look through it. We can't teach. We talked about this last year. We can no longer teach to the bottom. I ask you, what is the core function of education? We have to meet every student's needs, and we have to prepare our children for a world economy. In 2006, there were 1.3 million college graduates in the United States. There were 3.1 million college graduates in India who all speak English, and 3.3 million in China. The largest English-speaking country in the world right now is China. A world economy controls our economy and our daily lives. I want you to pull out this purple sheet. I'd like you to look at the bottom of the second page under results. Parent surveys overall quality of program, 3.9 out of a 4-point scale. Teacher surveys overall quality of the programs, 3.9 out of a 4-point scale. Now I challenge you to identify in our entire education system anywhere at all anything else that gets a 3.9 out of 4.0 evaluation by parents and teachers. We had one of these programs was in my community. The parents lined up to register their kids. They went out the door of the school, down the street, and around the block. And what types of programs were they asking for? They're asking for math and science so that their kids could compete on a world market. We're thinking outside the box. And right now, our system requires everybody to think inside the box except for one program. And I have to tell you how this program works because it's not in the bill. It's a competitive bidding program where school districts compete with each other for funding to get the best program. And those schools, districts that offer the best programs get the dollars. Every school district in the state of Wyoming has a chance for these dollars, and it's a great program. It's a bright light in our school district system that we should be proud of. And I know that I'll hear about rebated recapture dollars from Campbell County, Wyoming, and probably we ought to use some of our rebated recapture dollars in Campbell County, Wyoming to fund this program, and that's probably right. But we're talking about every school district in the state of Wyoming having the opportunity to compete with this program, and it's not just kids in Campbell County, Wyoming. It's kids from the state of Wyoming. So what kind of program are we creating here? Well, number one, it's something that works. Number two, it fosters competition amongst our school districts. Number three, it's a core function and people are working outside the box to do it. And number four, it's successful. So we have a program that works. It's innovation. It's encouraging innovation. It's successful and it puts competition into our school districts. And what do we want to do? Well, let's cut the funds for it. It reminds me of a song I heard during my misspent youth. The lyrics being, and the teacher said, "Flowers are red, young man, and green leaves are green. There's no need to see flowers any other way than the way they always have been seen." But the little boy said, "There are so many colors in the rainbow, so many colors in the morning sun, so many colors in the flower, and I see every one." Well, the teacher said, "You're sassy. There's ways that things should be. You'll paint the flowers the way they are, so repeat after me." And she said, "Flowers are red, young man, and green leaves are green. There's no need to see flowers any other way than the way they always have been seen." So we can have a program that fosters innovation, is successful, and puts competition into our schools, or we can have red or green flowers.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a lot like a multi-million dollar man who lives in a great big house on the hill
going down to the welfare office and signing up for food stamps. This whole bill doesn't make any sense anymore. There are I don't think anybody was listening. There are $131 million in the reserves of our local districts that are liquid assets that they can write a check for tomorrow. So you tell me why we need another $450,000 for some innovative program. If they want to go out and start an innovative program, there's $131 million that they have at their disposal that they can go access and innovate till their heart's content. So on and for the amendment and against the bill.
Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a question for the bringer of the amendment, because I hate to get bogged down in all the details. I know we love to hear all this debate, but if I vote for this amendment, am I making the summer enrichment program go away completely, or am I just making more money on top of the money we've already appropriated for the summer enrichment program go away?
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Answer to the last question. This is over and above the summer school. This is a special program over and above the summer school. But I think I need to just discuss a little bit about the savings, I guess we should call it, that all of these schools have. And many of these schools, some of these schools are schools that were the rebate recapture schools that built this up over a great period of time. We had another bill that went through earlier this year, or this session, if you remember, and we discussed the reserves. And some of these school districts have no reserves left. Some of them have spent all of these pre-95 reserves. Some of them have built theirs up by a little bit, and some of them have spent them down considerably. So there are about three or four different types of reserves you can have. You can have the rebate recapture reserves, which don't count for anything. You have the pre-95 reserves that before the MAP model came in. Excuse me, I'm not supposed to use that. The previous recalibration. And then you have the 15% carryover that we allow. So don't get confused. Some of the districts don't have a lot of money. Others have quite a bit of money.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just thought I'd take a minute because I am the parent of somebody who actively participated in two of these programs. These were tremendous programs in my school district. I'm privileged to attend on behalf of this body a national education organization where I have heard ad nauseum that we do not have enough children going into science and math. That is the public policy concern. These enrichment programs encourage kids to take an interest in science and math. And I can tell you that before the summer began, I had a young son who was not particularly interested in science, and now he is more interested in science. The program was beneficial. We can't let our desire to save money eliminate good programs. These have benefited students for a relatively modest cost, and if we can get even 5 kids, 10 kids in the state of Wyoming interested in pursuing a scientific career, then we have spent our money wisely.
Chairman Gangdery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question, first of all. I see on the sheet, on the purple sheet, it says that last year we awarded, and this was a pilot project just to see how this was going to go, and it says they had 50 applications, and they awarded 9 of them, and those 9 are listed there at the bottom of the page. If we refund this thing again for one more year, is the money just simply going to go to those 9 again, or do those 9, now we get rid of those and we give it to a new 9 for a different 9 to test it out? And then my last comment is, even though it was sort of dismissed earlier, I still think this is an important point that, you know, I disagree with our Supreme Court. These counties that took that money, they knew our intent. They took millions upon millions of dollars And here is one of those counties that took that money from the other districts, going down to the state and getting a grant for this program. It's just borderline offensive.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's a couple of comments I would like to make. First of all, to answer the last speaker's question, no, it will not be the same districts if this funding is to continue. A different applications will be requested again. School districts will again have the opportunity to submit programs, and they will then again be chosen. The other thing that I would like to draw your attention to is the handout that discusses the block grant model for gifted and talented. This student enrichment program is not about gifted and talented. It's about student enrichment. It's about all students. It's about providing creative, innovative, exciting ways for all children to participate in programs. I run independently of all of this a summer enrichment program through my particular organization. Last year we had over 1,200 kids participate in that program, learning everything from the Chinese language to how to decorate a cake. There were some exciting ways for kids to take core curricular activities and see the real world and the real way learning some of these things can impact their knowledge. The Purple Sheets talked to some testimonials about this pilot project and its importance and its innovative way of encouraging standalone, independent enrichment, not gifted and talented, independent enrichment programs. These are programs that don't go on during the regular school day. These are after school, Saturday, during the summer. These are all different kinds of exciting ways that people can learn. And we keep saying that's what we want. And this is a relatively low-budget way to encourage districts to achieve excellence for all of their students. I don't need to read the testimonials because you've heard a number of them. I would encourage your defeat of this amendment and your support of the bill. Thank you very much.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've been saving up all my speaking time. I haven't said nothing in a week, so. Mr. Chairman, again, a couple questions. There's about $20 million that we spend on summer school, after school, enrichment. So that's already in the budget. Then you can see the $2.4 million for gifted and talented. Then there's about $150 per student for technology. So many of our schools, of course, students are all getting one-to-one computing. Every student's getting a laptop, and that's on its way, which is great. I mean, and so when you look at this, I think these are issues that local people need to decide on this deal, because less than 0.1% of people are truly gifted. So there was talk about teaching the bottom, teaching here. You know, most of the people who are truly gifted and geniuses don't really need us anyway. You know what I mean? They get cruising on, graduate high school when they're like prepubescent, and college when they're adolescent and on. So I don't want to get this confused. Then there was talk about math and science. This program is not specific to math and science. It's all the content areas. There's enrichment in physical education, social studies, language arts, health, career and vocational, fine and performing arts. So it's not just a math science thing. It's not any of that. There was a comment about the largest English-speaking country in the world. Precisely my arguments why we don't need foreign language in the Hathaway, but that's another issue. But I would tell you that this $450,000 is going to be cast out again. It might not be these nine districts. It might be. I don't know. The programs that were judged to be the best programs got funding. Some programs were year-long. Some were just a week-long. How does that work? I just don't understand. So there's plenty of money in the model is my point. There's $20 million in summer school enrichment. There's $150 per child in technology. There's $2.4 million in gifted and talented. And that's not even touching the whole at-risk continuum where we really fund generously to try to get struggling kids up. So I would just... hope you'd kind of say, okay,
uncle. We've heard enough on this, and we got to draw the line somewhere, and this is a good place to start, $450,000. So thank you for your support and your aye vote on Amendment number 4. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Lubnow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the promotion. Two sentences and two rhetorical questions. If it's automatic, no one cares. If you compete, you get better. This program fosters competition. What other areas do we fund competition between schools? Are we better because of it? I'd urge you to vote against this amendment.
Do I hear the question?
Yes.
Question being called. We are on committee of the whole. Amendment number 4 to Senate File 56. All those in favor of committee of the whole amendment number 4, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Committee of the whole amendment number 4 has failed. We are back on the bill. Question being called.
Mr. Chairman, I have to speak one more time. I have to. Thank you.
Yes. Representative Teeters, please.
I just wanted to urge the body one more time to vote no on the bill. As far as the instructional facilitator part of the bill, we have $16,350,000 already appropriated for that program. We do not need an additional $5.8 million. As far as the summer school portion goes, we have $20 million already appropriated for that. And we've already had a long and lengthy discussion about food services. But we are headed into an unknown time in state history. I have no idea where we're going to be next year. But if we continue to have $2 natural gas, I can tell you this stuff is going to go up in smoke in a big hurry, and we may be looking for deeper across-the-board cuts. I think it's important that we start to gear down and get ready for that. And by defeating this bill, that will it's not going to get us there. It's going to save us some money. The other thing that irritates the heck out of me is that we brought the bill that came last year only funded these programs for 1 year. So it gave the body a false sense of security in the amount of money that these programs were actually going to cost. And in reality, they cost twice what we thought they were going to cost. I tried to convince the body of that last year when we passed this bill. And this was not rolled into anyone's budget. It should have been discussed through the appropriations process through the budgetary process that we have, and nobody picked it up. The governor didn't put it in his budget, and here we are on the floor of the legislature discussing another $7 million appropriation. And whether or not that money comes out of the foundation account or comes out of the general fund should be irrelevant to you. We are in tight times, and the actual amount of surplus that we have right now is probably nothing, maybe a deficit. We don't have any idea. But we don't need this bill, and I would urge you to vote no.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, before we vote on this, I just wanted to support and affirm the remarks of the good speaker about 2 hours ago. I'm not saying you should listen to him all the time, but this is one time. This is the one time where he's right on track. You know, he correctly pointed out that there's, $20 million profiled here. It's time for a reality check. There was testimony given about an hour ago that these districts collectively have been growing their surpluses. It first started out a few years ago at $60 million and $70 million. Now it's up to $131 million. All that tells me, from the standpoint of economics, is that we're giving them more money, or we're providing them money faster than they can figure out how to spend it. And if these things are important, these school districts can make the hard choices themselves with this surplus money all of these areas. So I would just like to see this Senate File 56 be defeated today so we don't have to go through this whole ordeal for the next 2 days. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Chairman McComey, for your second time.
Thank you. My first time on the bill entirely. First, I want to set the record straight. This bill contains $11,844,306, not $20-plus million dollars. Another record I want to set straight, there's not $20 million in here for summer schools. That's already been funded for the biennium. So the previous speaker, or a couple speakers ago, said there was $20 million in here for that. There's not, or that we'd already funded it for that. That was a whole different issue. I'd like to talk a little bit about the school facilitators. The school facilitators were in the model that the courts looked at. We decided to pull it out to make sure that the schools, much as some of the discussion earlier about tutors on this floor were there, that this money was spent the way that it was supposed to be spent, and the districts had to apply for it and record how it was used. With this money that's in here for the school facilitators, which is $5 million plus dollars, I'll give you the exact amount here in a second, $5,894 and 36, 300, $5,800,000, or $5,800,000 plus dollars. That brings us to 75% of what was recommended by our experts that set up the school funding model. So we're not anywhere near what they recommended for us to have for school facilitators, who has been shown provide more results in obtaining good results for children than anything else that we've got in our model. On and for the bill.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe I didn't speak clearly last time. I will try a little bit better this time. The $16 million that are currently been profiled for instructional facilitators is in the budget that's already been accepted. This would add an additional $5.8 million. What I'm trying to point to is the fact that if we kill this bill, the instructional facilitator program will continue and go on. This bill does not eliminate that program if we were to fail the bill. The other comment that I had about the summer school is also appropriate. It is in the budget. The $20 million for summer school is already in the budget. And so we don't have to worry about the additional $5.8 million. If we kill the bill, these programs will continue. The state does not need this bill for these programs to continue.
Chairman McComb.
Again, I have to point out, there is not $5 million in here for summer school. There's $4.5 million in here for food service, and there's $5.8 million in here for school facilitators. So if we're going to talk about this bill, and we're going to try and vote this bill down, which is good for education, then let's at least get it right. On and for the bill.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman McComey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 56 do pass, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Division being called for. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. Senate File 56 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
The motion passes.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, your Committee of the Whole, having had in consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. Senate File 76, amended, recommended, do pass. Representative Buchanan moved that the House recess until 2 p.m. Senate File 60, recommended, do pass. Senate File 56. Recommended, do pass. Signed, Zebony Bird, Chairman.
Okay, Representative Bird.
Mr. Chairman, I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passed. Messages from the Senate.
Message 347, Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to the bills as below by the vote indicated. Senate File 62, Discretionary Clause Prohibition Act, Ayes 27, Noes 3, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 348, Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to the bills as below by the vote indicated. Senate File 95, Medical Necessity Review Procedures, Ayes 30, Noes 0, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 349. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 198, Wheat Marketing Commission Assessments, Ayes 26, Noes 4, signed Diane Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 350. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 287, the House bill listed above passed on the third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Ayes 21, Noes 9. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diane Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 351. Mr. Speaker, Senate File 6. Pursuant to Joint Rule 2-4, the Senate recedes from non-concurrence and adopts the following House amendments. Signed, Diane Williams, Ayes 30, Noes 0, signed Diane Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 352, Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to the bills listed below by the vote indicated. Senate File 45, Improvement Service District Directors, Ayes 29, Noes 0, excused 1, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 353, Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to the bills listed below by the vote indicated. Senate File 2, Insurance Financial Reporting Requirements, Ayes 30, Noes 0, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 354, Mr. Speaker, the President appointed Senate conferees to meet with the Light Committee No. 2, it being a free committee from the House amendments to Senate File 53. The Senate conferees are Senator Schiffer, Chairman, Senator Jennings, Senator Martin, signed Diane Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 355, Mr. Speaker, Senate Joint Resolution 5, Hydraulic Fracturing. The Senate adopted the Joint Committee No. 1 report to the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 25, Noes 5, signed Diane Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Read referrals, Chairman Landa. Oh, well, hold up. We got to do standing committee reports first.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 129, engrossed, respectfully asked the same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Begbie, Barbudo, Kennedy, Gingrey, Patton, Throne, no, Mercer, Peasley, excused, Goldberg, signed, representing Gingrey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom is referred Senate File 87, engrossed, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Harshman, Pedersen, Phelps, Stewart, excused, Hammonds, Jorgensen, signed, Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, to whom was referred Senate File 99 engrossed. Respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Harshman, Pedersen, Philp, no, Hammond, Stewart, excused, Jorgensen, signed, Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two appropriations to whom is referred Senate File 135 engrossed. Respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Pedersen, Philp, no, Harshman, Stewart, excused, Jorgensen, signed, Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number seven, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred Senate File 145 engrossed. Respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Brown, Kraft, Hales, Illaway, Miller, Zwanitzer, Dan, excused, Dirks, Stubson, conflict, Lubno, signed, Representative Illaway, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 24 engrossed. Respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Bonner, Escobel, Goggles, Hallinan, Landon, Millen, Shepperson, no, Harvey, excused, Davison, signed, Representative Landon, Chairman.
Re-referrals. Chairman
Mr. Speaker, pro tem, I would like to re-refer Senate File 24, Senate File 93, and Senate File 66 to Appropriations Committee Number 2.
Okay.
That was
so 20, noted.
24, 93, and 66.
Okay. Conference committees on Senate File 53, Anderson, Chairman, Goggles, and Miller. That was joint conference committee number two on that, Senate File 53. House Bill 226, joint conference committee number one, Brown, Chairman, Shepperson, and Throne. Okay. Committee announcements. Chairman Childers.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem, your committee number six, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will have two meetings tomorrow, Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. in room H10, and then upon adjournment in room H11 with the Senate to finalize the interim topics in the afternoon meeting and to discuss the initial interim topics in the morning meeting.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Pro Tem, your committee number nine, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock in H18 to consider Senate File 44, Pipeline Inspection and Safety, and Senate File 108, Engrossed Long-Term Care Facilities.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Pro Tem, the committee number one, Judiciary, will meet tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. to discuss interim topics.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Pro Tem, your committee number four, Education, will meet upon adjournment tomorrow night in H10, where we will discuss interim topics.
Chairman Semling.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Pro Tem, your committee number five, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, will meet upon adjournment this afternoon with the Ag Committee from the other body to finalize prioritization of the interim topics. I can't say that.
Okay. Chairman Berger.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem, you just didn't want to acknowledge me because it means more work for your Appropriations Committee number two. So your Appropriations Committee number two is planning to meet here upon adjournment to hear Senate number 88, required use of ignition interlock devices. And as you all heard, we were just re-referred some bills, and we will start on those this evening also. Senate File 24, Health Care Reform Demonstration Project, Senate File 93, Oral Health Initiative, and Senate File 66, Medicaid Foot Care. The other body is still in session. I will have the chairman of Labor and Health come over and help us work through some of this, but any
that
of you as health sponsors may want to show up. Thank you.
Good report, Chairman Berger. Chairman Cohey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, will meet 10 minutes upon adjournment tonight, that's February 24th, in room H-17, to discuss three bills, Senate File 119, engrossed, public transportation funding, Senate File 134, engrossed, embossed license plates, and Senate File 143, engrossed, marking structures that obstruct flight.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Why don't you let Chairman Landon go, and then I'm going to ask
for privilege. Oh, Chairman Landon, then. He's not.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, Committee Number 10, Labor, will meet tomorrow afternoon upon adjournment to hear Senate File 39, Child Health Insurance Program, and Senate File 141, Midwives Licensure, in Room 302.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Privilege of the floor.
Privilege of the floor.
Thank you. A lot of you legislators have asked about the blue books. I wanted to let you know that in the Capitol Rotunda, from 8 until 2, the staff of the State Parks and Cultural Resources Department will be on hand, and you can purchase blue books there tomorrow. This will be the last time during the legislature that you can do so. So if you're interested, tomorrow in the rotunda.
Okay. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I move that the House adjourn until 10 a.m. Wednesday, February 25th.
10 a.m. You've heard the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion passed. Adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow.